Now, News Talk Radio CJAD 800 presents the CEO Series, insights from top business leaders. Your host is Carl Moore.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. The CEO Series takes you inside our capstone MBA class at McGill. Each week, we sit down with some of Canada and indeed the world's top leaders to discuss strategy, leadership, and today's pressing business issues. And some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us, Justin Trudeau, Mohamed Yunus Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Alain Belmar, until recently the CEO of Bombardier. This show gives you a thin, well, perhaps not so thin, slice of the kind of thoughtful leaders our McGill MBAs are exposed to. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Ethan Brown, founder and CEO of Beyond Meat, a producer of plant-based burgers, beef, sausages, and other meats. A nice Montreal side note, his father is a professor at McGill. Thank you for joining us today, Ethan.
Carl, thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure, and I've enjoyed getting to know you over the last several years, and this is the next step in our journey together. Appreciate it.
Look forward to it. So tell us about your early years. Where did you grow up, and what did your family do for a living?
So I grew up in the Washington, D.C. and College Park, Maryland area. Had an interesting childhood because we grew up in the city, my father never really liked the urban environment. And so having grown up in the country himself, wanted us to have that experience and wanted to continue to enjoy the countryside himself. So we had a farm since my earliest days that we would go out to. And the one that was the most impactful for me was one in Western Maryland. And it was supposed to be a hobby farm. It was supposed to be a place to just go and recreate and relax. But my dad, being a bit of an entrepreneur himself, started a dairy operation there in which he was a partner in it. He's a full-time professor like yourself. That became something I think that was defining in my childhood, the opportunity to be around agriculture and be around particularly agricultural animals and begin to understand the resource and other considerations that go into using animals for food.
And your dad's a professor at McGill, as I recall.
He is, exactly. Really enjoys it. And when I was growing up, he was at the University of Maryland. And then after I was out of college, I went up to McGill and has had a great time there.
Growing up as a child, what did you think you wanted to do, Ethan?
So very young, when I was 10 or younger, I really loved books by a guy named James Herriot, who wrote, he's a vet, and wrote books like All Creatures Great and Small and many other terrific pieces. And so I wanted to be a veterinarian, and that was something that was a real passion for me. And so when we were out on the farm, I had the opportunity to get to know both wild and domesticated animals. And not knowing that I was doing, harm or causing fear, I would often trap wild animals and try to study them and understand them and, of course, release them. But I just was always fascinated by life other than human life. And the first way that expressed itself in me was wanting to be a vet. And as I got older, like most teenagers, changed my mind many times about what I wanted to do. But ultimately, when I was just finishing college and was starting up graduate school, I had a conversation with my dad around what I wanted to do with my life. And at the time, I was kind of restless. I wanted to go and be with friends and I think in New York and maybe pause my education and do that. He asked me an important question as I was trying to figure this out. He said, "Sir, what do you think the biggest problem is in the world?" And I thought a lot about that. I came back and I said, "Well, I think it's climate because, it's everything else we're doing could be destabilized by that. So, I could become a doctor and work on human health, or I could become an artist and great art or something if I was lucky enough to do so. But if the climate is really destabilized, our whole culture is at risk." And so I felt that was the right answer. I said, "Okay, well, then go work on that." And I thought that was a really wise bit of advice. And so I did that, and I got into energy, and ultimately got pretty deep into renewable and alternative energy forms.
Now, it's interesting because a lot of my students want to know, what's their passion, how do they find it, or calling's another way of putting it. What is your passion today, and how did you find it, and what age were you roughly?
I'm, I think, both a good and then cautionary tale on that front. Good in the sense I ultimately did find my calling, I also resisted it for many years. And as I talked about, I had a true passion for wildlife and animals as a child, and a sense of fairness about it, that felt was being violated. There are certain things that I didn't think were fair in the world, but tucked that away because it wasn't serious enough in sort of my worldview of a thing to work on. It almost had a sort of sentimental type feeling to it, which was wrong. But you know, I'd been trained to be able to go work on energy, and particularly my first graduate degree was around that, and it was a sense of that's what a serious person would go do, not you know, kind of create a company that's focused on something as unusual as plant-based meat. So I did resist this notion very early on, and in my 20s, I do remember thinking about very much wanting to have a run at something that would be like a plant-based McDonald's, something where you gave everybody the experience they were looking for, but did it in a way that was less harmful to their bodies and to the earth than mainstream conventional agriculture. I just didn't act on it, and I just felt that I had a pretty good career going in energy. I started at a very low level at a company called Ballard Power Systems, which I'm sure you're aware of being in Canada. And worked my way up to report to the CEO there and had a good career. But it kept coming back to me, kept eating away at me. And I kept thinking, you know, this is something, this is what I really feel I want to do. There's an unanswered question here that I want to go explore. And I want to make a contribution here. And there's something that's sort of fundamental in me that wants to go pursue this. But it didn't fit with my worldview of who I was. And so I resisted it. And that was a big mistake. Ultimately, I gave into it and said, I'm going to go do this. And I wish I'd done it earlier.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm sitting down with Ethan Brown, founder and CEO of Beyond Meat. You had that idea and you kind of wrestled with it. How many years till you grabbed the bull by the horn, so to speak?
I started working seriously on this probably 2006. I began to really research what all this meant. And I think that is something that helped me a lot. I do try to marinate in a problem, you know, really try to see it from every angle and soak it up and try to understand the core of it. And that I think is a really useful way of thinking. It gets you to get to the right place ultimately. And so, you know, I was lucky to be doing this at a time when it wasn't just about having a library card anymore. You know, you could go on the internet and read till you're too exhausted to read on scientific papers about whatever subject you wanted to explore. And so I had that great opportunity to do that. And so I would come home from work and, you know, play with the kids and stuff and put them to bed and then just read. And I read a ton about the research that was going on in taking protein from plant and realigning the structure of the protein and amino acids to create the fibrous texture of muscle. And then I began to read a lot about meat. And, you know, it was really important to me to demystify meat and to deconstruct it. And so I began to look at meat not as something that had to come from an animal, but rather I started to look at its composition. And, you know, through a lot of research, kind of came to the conclusion that it's really five things that are in meat, and it's something that's very understandable. It's amino acids, it's lipids, it's trace minerals, it's vitamins, and it's predominantly water, just like our bodies. And so one of the things that works really well is taking medical equipment that we use to understand our own bodies and then apply it to meat. And so we can take a piece of muscle or meat and put it under the same type of equipment that you would have an MRI for your knee. And that gives us the opportunity to really understand the structure. And once you understand the architecture, then you can start to rebuild it bit by bit. But I first had to understand it. Whenever we welcome new scientists in, one of the things I really hope they understand is they're here to understand meat better than anybody in the world. And then allowing us to go back into the plant kingdom and say, okay, well, what plants have these constituent parts? And then how do we get them? And then how do we organize them in the same architecture as meat? So it took me several years of reading to understand that. And that's really when I got enough momentum emotionally and intellectually to start the company.
We're speaking with Ethan Brown, founder and CEO of Beyond Meat, a producer of plant-based burgers, beef, sausages, and other meats. Coming up, we'll talk about how he started Beyond Meat and got Bill Gates on board. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with Ethan Brown, founder and CEO of Beyond Meat, a producer of plant-based burgers, beef sausages, and other meats. How long have you been a vegan?
So, somewhat similar to the route that I took to starting the company, I first became vegetarian for spells as I was a child, as I was sort of a teenager. And then in college, I played basketball. I kept getting injured. I kept having issues with my knee. I had about 4 knee surgeries. And so at some point, someone pulled me aside and said, you know, you really need to eat animal protein at a higher level, you know, and get this dealt with. And, of course, that was terrible advice. But being a young person that didn't have other information around me, I took it. And so I started to eat meat again. And then after I got out of college, pretty shortly thereafter, I stopped and was vegetarian. And probably by the time I was 30, I was vegan. But it wasn't coherent, you know. Part of becoming an adult is sort of integrating the different parts of your worldview. So I was still wearing leather and would still sometimes eat fish and things like that as I was in my early 20s. And I needed to kind of think about a full way of conceptualizing this in order to become completely vegan, and that took me a while.
So it's an ethical thing as well as a health thing then, from your viewpoint?
So what's so interesting for me, it's about almost efficiency too, in the sense of, I've never seen anything in my career in any field where you can focus on one thing. And in my case, it's changing the protein at the center of the plate. That's it. That's all I want to do is, you know, when people have a burger or they have chicken or they have pork, I want them to continue to have all the great experiences they've had growing up and continue to enjoy. But it's just with a plant-based meat as opposed to an animal-based meat. And so if you think about it in the same vein, of a phone versus a mobile phone. You know, people you didn't have to take something away from them. They gravitated towards something that's better. If I'm successful, we'll create something that's better than animal protein. And if you do that, you can solve for 4 things. You can solve for some of the human health crises we have, whether heart disease, diabetes, cancer. There's a lot of literature out there that draws associations between very high levels of animal protein consumption and those diseases. And then you look at things like climate, where there's a big debate on it, but I think everybody would agree that livestock is a major source of emissions. And then you look at natural resources, land, energy, water, et cetera. And then finally, animal welfare. So it's really those 4 reasons, and we call them here at the company, call them the 4 horsemen of change, where they really are bringing about a new era in how we think about meat and whether meat has to come from an animal or whether it can be something that's built directly from plants.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and today I'm sitting down with Ethan Brown, founder and CEO of Beyond Meat. What exactly are Beyond Meat products made of? Are they from a test tube, or take us to the journey of one of your products from plant to plate?
It's a great question, because this is probably one of the biggest misconceptions about Beyond Meat. And so in 2020, you're going to see, for the balance of the year, a lot of information from us around the process we use and the ingredients we use, because we do have, and I have no ill will toward them and no desire to be adversarial with them, but the incumbent animal agricultural industry and some of the trade groups have been pretty adamant in marketing that, you know, we're a processed food and there's ingredients in there that you're not going to like. And so we do now have to go out and tell people, well, here's what's in it, here's how it's made, and thankfully the answers are really, really strong. I'm super proud of our process, and I'll start on process first and then go to ingredients. So what we're doing is let's say we start with a pea, right, and we're separating the protein and the fiber by, you know, first you mill the pea, and then you take the flour and you put it in a water, and that water has a change in pH, and so that change facilitates separation of protein and fiber. The protein's then dried, and then we send it through a system of heating, cooling, and pressure that essentially breaks the bonds as they would exist in plants and resets them in a structure that's more similar to how they would exist in muscle. And so instead of running a lot of plant material through an animal to create that texture, we're essentially doing it directly from the plant. And so it's a very clean process. It's one that is very transparent. You know, you'd be welcome to come anytime to our facilities in Missouri, knock on the door. I don't need to be there. You don't have to have a, you know, big discussion with our PR team, and we'll show you the process. It's important to us that we let consumers know how their food is made. I always ask, if someone's wanting to do that, they also ask the same of a meat production facility. And I think it says something. You're not allowed to go see those facilities unless you're under, you know, very tight control. And then if you look at the ingredients, one thing that takes really important in part, particularly on this conversation, in this conversation, is we use, you know, yellow peas, but that's today, and tomorrow you can be thinking about, you know, things like lupin or camelina or mustard seed or many things that grow throughout Canada, Saskatchewan, et cetera. And so this is not a threat to agriculture. Now, there may be winners and losers, but overall, I think this will be a big win for farmers, because you think about the efficiency. Like, if you think about just the standard microeconomic theory about making more efficient production and growth as a result, we use 93% less land. We have 90% fewer emissions. We use 99% less water, and we use half the energy. So if I'm a farmer that's currently using 100 acres, and it's, let's say it's all fields, so we take out the grazing land, just all fields, you have 100 acres, and now you can use 93% less land. So in 7 acres, you could grow the same amount of burgers that you were growing now with all 100 if you switch to a process that uses our technology. That's a win, right? And so that's the kind of messaging we got to get out there to communicate to people about what ingredients we use and the benefits. When you think about the color is very difficult. We rely on things like beet juice and other all-natural ingredients to try to affect that red color that then transitions to black and gray. And then the fats we use, whether it's coconut oil or canola, that provide the mouthfeel. But we're constantly looking to improve, the health profile of our product. It's a very healthy product today. If you look at our, let's say, what's sold at A&W or Dunkin' here in the United States in terms of the breakfast sausage, it's really interesting. So we're able to provide a product that has more protein and more iron, but has less fat and less saturated fat.
How did you fund this? I mean, it's been a number of years now. You went to an IPO last year, but how did you fund it in early days, I guess, out of your own pocket to some degree? But what were some of the other funding sources?
So I did start with my own money, and like many entrepreneurs, kind of went through that. You know, and I think that's important as an entrepreneur in the sense that you do need to be all in. You need to remove the safety net, because if you have a safety net, you'll take it, because it's not an easy road. And so at some point, you know, you get your back to the wall, and I often find I do my best thinking in that environment, because you just are forced. You know, you can just almost feel the neurons firing as you're trying to figure out how to get your way out of something. And so there are many instances that were like that, where you know, I'd been either run out or running out of resources, but still need to grow the business. And so I had friends and family that contributed, and then ultimately venture. And my approach to venture was the same as my approach to most things we're doing. You always want to look for the marquee partner and try to align yourself with the best in whatever industry you're going after. And so when I approached the VC market, I knew that Kleiner Perkins had a tremendous track record and a tremendous network. And so while I spoke with many other venture firms, I was highly focused on getting them to take the company on. And so when they did reach out and we started a dialogue up, I was pretty clear with them that I wasn't going to turn it down just on valuation, that you know, they wanted to offer me less money for more of the company, and I was willing to do that because of the network they had and because of the pace at which they moved. One of the things that one of the partners said to me was that, you know, we try to do in a month or something, I can't remember the exact phrase, but a month, what most do in a quarter, and that's really true. And we've taken that, and that's how we operated the company. We try to move so quickly, and this gets back to our innovation, that if you're trying to replicate what we're doing, you're really going to be chasing a ghost, because we're already on to the next iteration of the lab. And so finding a partner that thought like that and getting aligned with them was really important to me. So ultimately, it took my first venture check from Kleiner Perkins.
How'd you get Bill Gates on board?
Well, it was Kleiner, I think, and particularly a guy named Ray Lane. They connected me with Bill Gates and was fortunate enough to meet with him now several times throughout the growth of the company. And Bill said something really interesting early on, which was, I think maybe one of the first or second meetings, was to go international as quick as you can and to drop the price of the product below that of animal protein as quick as you can. And both of those have been governing goals for us. I mean, not just because he said them, but because they're the right thing to do.
We're speaking with Ethan Brown, founder and CEO of Beyond Meat, a producer of plant-based burgers, beef, sausages, and other meat equivalents. In a moment, we'll talk to Ethan about how the meat plants have had reduced production due to coronavirus. And so what is happening at Beyond Meat production sites is something on our mind. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO series. We're speaking with Ethan Brown, founder and CEO of Beyond Meat, a producer of plant-based burgers, beef, sausages, and other meat equivalent products. Ethan, some meat plants have had to reduce production due to outbreaks. What are conditions like in Beyond Meat facilities, and what measures has Beyond Meat taken to protect its workers?
So, you know, I'd like to say that we had designed our facilities with the pandemic in mind, but that certainly would not be true. We do happen to benefit, however, from a workflow within our production facilities that is pretty naturally dispersed in terms of employees. And so we don't have the conditions in which people are standing right next to each other in a damp environment performing services. So we have been very fortunate to not have thus far any positive COVID-19 results within our workforce at the manufacturing level. I really want to call out the work of two women in our company. The first is our head of quality control, which is Kelly Wilson, and then the head of our HR, which is Carrie Soto. They were out ahead of this in a way that was enormously impressive to me. They took measures right away to reduce the risk to our workforce in terms of social distancing, hygienic measures, testing. Everything you can think of, they got out ahead of and really helped us. We had an epidemiologist come on board at UCLA. So they took the right measures at the right time to keep us safe, and I'm really grateful to them.
Did you have to shut down at all, or were you able to stay open as an essential service?
So our food manufacturing facilities were able to stay open as essential service. Everything else closed down. We have a very, very small team in a very large innovation center that comes in to do some essential work, but they are distributed and a fraction of our workforce.
Beyond Meat beat quarterly profit and revenue estimates just last week. How do you explain that? And was it a surprise to you, Ethan?
That was not a surprise going in. What happened for us is some very interesting trends started to emerge, particularly in the first quarter, where you're seeing that household penetration in the United States of Beyond Meat, I think, continues to increase, right? And then something else concurrently is occurring that is rare, which is our buyer rate is also increasing. So we're getting a larger number of households buying the products, but we're also getting each household buying more, right? So that's a terrific trend to be part of, and it's rare for a CPG brand to experience those simultaneously with the strength that we are. Now, you've heard me talk about this in the past. I love great margins. You need them to keep reinvesting in your business. But I think this summer, what you'll see is something different from us. We view this as a special moment in time where we can kind of hold our breath, dive in, and see as far as we can go this summer with respect to creating a pricing structure that is closer to animal protein. Not because we think this is just a random summer to do so, but because of the significant run-up in animal protein markets, where you look at beef is now at $4.10 on the wholesale market per pound in the United States. So it's doubled over the course of the last month. And of course, in China, you see where pork is up 119% due to the African swine flu. So all these things are coming together to create almost a perfect storm for Beyond Meat, where the consumer seems ready for the reasons we've talked about, health and environment, animal welfare, et cetera. And then the markets are ready in terms of disruption to the incumbent industry that we're trying to make inroads against.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and today I'm sitting down with Ethan Brown, founder and CEO of Beyond Meat.
Could the coronavirus pandemic make more people turn to plant-based diet in the shorter long term? Has it made any difference from your viewpoint?
You know, again, another really interesting question, and I almost feel like it's ours to experience. I don't know that I can articulate it properly yet, because I think so many different conclusions are being drawn and insights are being gained from how the consumer is behaving right now with respect to COVID-19. But you would certainly think so, right? My intuition says that there must be something going on within some segment of the population where they're beginning to associate the use of biological systems to produce meat with the increasing occurrences of virus and disease. If you think about starting with the African swine flu in Asia about 12 months ago, where 60% of the hog population was culled or otherwise destroyed. And then you look at this most recent issue here in our own facilities in the United States and Canada and elsewhere, where workers are not able to perform their jobs without getting sick due to COVID in meat facilities. And then you look at the outbreak in Ireland and in South Carolina of avian flu. There's too many occurrences for people to not begin to make that association. So we'll see how it plays out for the consumer. But we certainly feel strongly that a new model is needed for protein production and that we have such a model.
How have restaurants closing, how has that impacted your business, or has it very much?
So, you know, I was just on the phone with one of the largest franchisee owners at one of the largest global restaurants this morning, and we were talking about responses to all of this. And, you know, it certainly has been challenging, particularly as the first quarter began to close out in kind of the second half of March. We did start to see significant declines in food service sales. But interestingly, correspondingly, you saw an increase in retail sales. They didn't exactly offset one another, so we still did have some diminished level of sales, what we expected in Q1. But going forward, we really challenged our executive team and our entire company to come up with what we called an offensive strategy and defensive strategy to get through this period. And the key elements of that strategy were really around how do we reroute to the consumer? So how do we get to the consumer? Even though the consumers change their habits, how do we get to them to make sure that we're providing them with our high quality protein in where they're going to be consuming it? And then second, how do we repurpose? So do we have food service lines that are running right now that should be repurposed over into retail? And so we took those goals and we said, okay, we're going to reroute to the extent we can. So we're going to do things like Grubhub and Postmates with our QSR partners. So we're going to be delivering the food to people's homes. And then we're going to switch over some of our lines over to retail. So we did those. And then I think the last piece of our strategy is, you know, how do we use this opportunity this summer to attract as many consumers as possible to the brand? And we think that offering value packs in retail is a really important way to do that. If you see an incumbent industry that's on its heels because of factors that are really, you know, global in nature, how do you take advantage of that to force a new model into existence? And we feel that pricing this summer is one key step.
But the good news is that the price of meat is up. So you have some room there to give value packs without really hurting margins that much.
Yeah. And I think we have very clearly signaled to the street that we're not looking for, you know, the second quarter or third quarter to be, you know, margin stories. They really should be about consumer growth. About welcoming new consumers to our brand and proving out this model. And so if I get back to this concept, hold your breath, you know, it's that kind of fake it till you make it, in the sense that we're going to show that at lower pricing, more consumers will come into our brand because we know that over time our COGS will support that lower pricing. So we're going to kind of signal that, see what kind of reaction we get. And then as we, you know, we're putting production facilities in Europe, we're putting them in China, we're putting them in the United States, additional ones. So we're going to keep increasing the efficiency of our production, right? And that will allow us to drive down our cost of goods sold. We had the lowest cost of goods sold ever in the company's history this past quarter. And that's just part of a steady march toward our ultimate goal of underpricing animal protein in the long run.
Where did the idea for Feed a Million Plus Pledge come from, and how does it work? Were you able to get to a million meals in the month of April?
Yes, we actually got to many more than a million. So we actually started calling it Feed a Million Plus. It came from the notion that consumers and customers alike, so consumers, you know, obviously buyers of our product, but also our customers who we consider to be the QSR, quick serve restaurants, were hurting, right? Franchisees, owners, and things like that, really under a lot of pressure, right? And so we wanted to be of service to not only our consumer, but to our franchisee owners to help them weather this storm. And so putting together programs that had major celebrities and Beyond Meat supporters drop off or direct donations to frontline workers, to hospitals, to the most vulnerable populations in our society, homeless shelters, women shelters, et cetera. We felt that that was the right message at the right time. We pulled all of our standard marketing. Nobody wants to be marketed to right now. You know, I'm sure you guys got these emails in the beginning of this crisis where there's a nice one sentence and then, you know,
during this difficult time. And then the sentence below, they're trying to sell you something. It's nauseating. Nobody wants to hear that. So we said, let's not spend money marketing during this period. Let's do good and let's invest in our relationship with the consumers. That's really where that came from.
We're speaking with Ethan Brown, founder and CEO of Beyond Meat, a producer of plant-based burgers, beef, sausage, and other meat equivalents. As we all know, striking a healthy work-life balance can be hard, especially during a global pandemic. Up next, we'll hear from Ethan about how he manages his personal life and his work life. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking with Ethan Brown, founder and CEO of Beyond Meat, a producer of plant-based burgers, sausages, and other meats. Working from home as a CEO, how do you lead differently?
So it has really challenged my thinking, the fact that we all are working from home. And I'm not too proud to admit that before the COVID crisis, I had sent an email out to members of the company saying that I wanted to make sure everybody was at present at work as much as they possibly could, and that taking a day here, a day there to work from home was fine, but I didn't want to see it as a habit. And I believe so strongly in intensity and bringing your best self to work every day. Preparing for work like you're preparing for a game or some kind of competition, I feel is a really important mindset. And I didn't see that happening when people were working from home. But I've changed my thinking entirely. I have noticed that my executive team has become more rather than less focused. I think we are engaged and in sync with one another in a way that we haven't been before, because we're not all over the map. We're not all traveling constantly. So I think we understand more what's going on in each division right now, because we're in constant communication. So we have these weekly executive calls, and I found that during this period, they often become redundant because we're always talking anyway, because we're focused on the business and not focused on external things as much. And so I found that to be a real benefit, and I'm going to try to make adjustments as we emerge from this that allow people to work more from home. Because I think it increases the efficiency and enables a stronger outcome. But I also think there's obviously very strong societal benefits. I live here in Los Angeles, and you can see the Santa Monica Mountains from my home in a way that you never could before. I understand that's happening in the Himalayas as well. Obviously, greenhouse gases are way down. Smog, as I just referenced, is way down. Traffic fatalities must be way down, right? So there really are some things that we have to learn from what's going on here and bring with us as we emerge outside of it. The notion that you get in your car and drive to an office and spend a lot of time away from your family and then come home at the end of the day, certainly isn't, if you look back at the course of human history, the norm, right? It's a very recent phenomenon, and maybe that's not the right model as we try to combat climate. And so get the right KPIs in place, the right goals, the right bonus structure, see if you can create a framework that allows people to flourish from wherever they are. And that's a challenge I think that all businesses now should take on because of the benefits of distributed workforce.
Are you working less because you're working from home?
I'm working more for sure. You don't have that downtime in the airport or, getting to the airport or, coming back from meetings. It's actually more intense. And I think that's something you have to guard against because it's just constant, right? You're just able to keep working and working and working. And so finding ways to still have that social interaction and things of that nature is important.
Are you helping to homeschool the kids?
Yeah, actually, I am a little bit. They don't want my help. They're both freshmen in high school, so they think that they know it all. It reminds me of that Mark Twain quote, what is it when I was 18, I thought my dad, what was it? My dad knew nothing. I was amazed at how much he learned by the time I was 30.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and today I'm sitting down with Ethan Brown, founder and CEO of Beyond Meat. Even without the coronavirus, you're in the midst of it. You're a dad, a husband, a CEO, all that good stuff. How did you manage work-life integration?
Yeah, I'd probably not as well as I should, but I do make them a priority. I do make my kids a huge priority. And part of it is it's geographic in the sense of it's an example. My son is a very committed basketball player, and so there's a hoop in our warehouse here at the facility. So after school, I get the really nice treat of being able to go out and say hello to him as he works out there and plays games and things like that. So you try to integrate your family with your business life. And my daughter is going to be switching schools, and I'm trying to get her in a school right down the street for that same purpose. So I think it's a real shame how we have separated work and family and created this kind of really deep divide. I love seeing families that go into business together generationally. I hope that somehow I'll have the opportunity to do that with my kids someday. So, again, I think, particularly if you talk about combining calling and vocation, it's really dangerous if you don't get a hold of that fact that you've got some little folks looking up at you figuring out how to live. Because it can be all-consuming. And so bring them along on the journey and integrate them into what you're doing and, make sure you catch every game you possibly can. So you do crazy things. You take red eyes a lot and do overnights to faraway cities and get back as quick as you can so you can be part of their lives in a way that's meaningful. I think I'm doing a decent job at that, and I know I could do better.
What is the best piece of advice you've ever received, Ethan?
I've been really fortunate to have some really strong people around me to help guide me on things. But I think the nugget that really had an impact was, how do you think about career and calling in the same sentence? And it's you're lucky if you can do that. And if you can figure out a way to do that, you draw on this well of resources and conviction and strength that allows you to do things that maybe you didn't think you could do. So probably that piece of advice, just figure out a problem, align yourself with trying to solve that problem, and make that a career.
Do you still play basketball? When I've seen you around in Montreal, you look like you're in pretty good shape. How do you keep in shape?
I wish I did play a lot of hoops still. I play around a lot with basketball just because of my son's interest, and my daughter plays volleyball, so they're both very active in sports. I think the fact that I'm in good shape is more a result of the fact that I use exercise to stay focused and to get through the day, which is often packed and stressful. And so I have a regime where I work out cardio for half an hour in the morning, and I either row or I do a Peloton. And one of the things I love about the Peloton is that you can go through these national parks around the world, right? I never use the classes. I always just look at the screen that's taking me through. Like this morning, I was in Yosemite. And then I take a break from work at 2:30, and I go and do some sort of weights for half an hour. And I have to do that. If I don't do that, the quality of my day is quite different.
What's your favorite Beyond Meat product?
Man, I love them all, but I really love our breakfast sausage. I mean, I could eat dozens of them.
Last question. What book are you reading right now?
One book that I think is really relevant for this conversation is Sapi Bakal's Loon Shots. So I had read it previously and had him come and talk to our company, and it was really good. It was sort of about the issue we have here and many companies have about how do you get artists in terms of the technical folks and soldiers in terms of the sort of more scaling and engineers to speak the same language and to react with the same sense of urgency, because that's really important to the pace of innovation. And he has some really good thoughts on that. He has some really good thoughts in this book about innovation, not just about product, but about innovating how you think about the customer. And some great examples about how Pan Am and American went at it, and how American was ultimately successful not because of having bigger engines, but because of having a great reservation system. And so there's just good nuggets in there that I like a lot.
This is the CEO Series. Ethan, thank you for joining us today.
Appreciate it. An honor to be on the show. Thank you so much.
This show is produced by Marie LaBrosse. We'd also like to thank our technical producer, Brian Kelliser. Thank you for tuning into the CEO Series. À la prochaine.
For more info and full interviews, go to cjad.com now.